three.
Didn't get there. Looked like Jamal Adams may have led the charge from his safety position.
Two.
Gentlemen, welcome aboard the Athletics Can't Wait Jets podcast, your nonstop shop for all things Jets. Now here are your hosts, Tim McMaster and Connor Hughes. Listen safely.
Can't wait!
Believe it or not, the NFL season kicks off in 1 month from tonight as we record the Can't Wait podcast on August 10th. Tim McMaster here along with Connor Hughes and Marissa Morris. This is going to be mostly a mailbag episode, but we'll get to a couple of topics before we open things up to the questions. But first of all, Connor, you were on time this morning for the record. Is this a new Connor Hughes? Did you accidentally wake up? What's going on?
I think it was I accidentally went to sleep too early. I think that's actually what it was. We were out at a friend's barbecue. A close friend of mine had a few friends over for his birthday and to see his baby and stuff like that. So we were over there. And I don't know, like, I guess when you're out in the sun all day, it kind of beats you up a little bit, because we got back at like 10:30 or so. And I was like, I'm exhausted. Like, I'm done. And so I passed out. And all of a sudden I woke up. I actually woke up not even to my alarm at like 8:30. And I was like, huh. I was like, I actually feel kind of like refreshed not going to bed at like 1 o'clock playing video games all night like I'm a freaking middle school again. I was like, oh, I feel kind of like refreshed and rejuvenated, and I was like, oh, I'll snooze for a little bit longer, snooze till 9, open my eyes again. I was like, man, I feel damn fine, like this is pretty good. So I was like, you know what, this is gonna be new age. I'm gonna break out the athletic shirt to represent the brand. I'm gonna show up 5 minutes early to just shock the hell out of Marissa, and we've been rocking and rolling ever since. So I'm feeling good, man. This is about as like alive and alert as I've been for a podcast in a while. Not like last week when I was dragging. I was hurting for that one.
I feel like
that one I was a little beat up for.
Yeah, I feel like we're well prepared, more than we've been probably since last season. I don't know, but we're ready to go. It's going to be a good episode. Before we get to your questions, and get them in, as if you're listening to us live right now on YouTube and watching, get some more questions in. We got some great ones from Twitter as Connor put out the word as well. But before we get to that stuff, Connor, since we last did the podcast, the Jets have saved more money, so that's a good thing, I think, for the future. Quincy Enunwa officially released. I just love your take on you know, why now? There's the money saved for the future more so than this year, but this seems to be a running theme the last couple of weeks with the Jets just kind of stockpiling some extra cash with the, you know, the salary cap probably dropping a little next year.
Yeah, honestly, like Enunwa, I figured was going to get cut. Like that's the whole thing that was going to happen. The Jets were going to let Enunwa go. He was never going to play another down for the Jets. It wasn't going to happen. Odds are he's never going to play another down of football in his career. And it's honestly, it's pretty sad, man, because I've watched I wasn't covering the Jets on a full-time basis Enunwa's rookie year, but I did see him from the little glimmers of hope he kind of showed in 2015 that he could actually be a player late there in the season. He started making some plays, finding a role for himself in Chan Gailey's offense, to really breaking out in 2016. And it looked like the Jets had a player on their hands. I mean, it really did. I mean, the guy was if you've ever seen him, I mean, the guy was as jacked of a human being as I've ever seen in my life. Like, this dude was just, I mean, he was the most physically fit human being. I mean, these guys are all professional athletes, so all of these guys are in tremendous shape. Quincy Enunwa made them all look like high school JV players with how unbelievably like fit this dude was. And you looked at him and you're like, that guy's a wideout? Like, the dude was 6'3", 6'2", 6'3". I mean, a solid I think he was like 220-ish, like a solid 220, and built like crazy, where you looked at him and you're like, I wouldn't want to tackle that guy. I mean, once he got the ball in his hands, he was an absolute force, and I think that's what made Enunwa special, was that he was one of those guys that was too big for the defensive backs to deal with, he was too fast for linebackers and stuff to deal with, and he was just a nuisance for defensive coordinators to game plan. He wasn't really a true receiver, he wasn't a tight end, he wasn't an H-back, he was a listed receiver, he ran routes, but he was one of those guys that kind of reminded me a little bit of like a stronger Jarvis Landry, that once the ball was in his hands, he could make an absolute difference. And he had to work on his hands because he did not have natural hands and he struggled with drops throughout his career. But when he had the ball in his hands, he was just a you-know-what to bring down. And it's a shame that his career went the way it did. I mean, he dealt with some minor injuries and things like that because he would take some extra hits. But you can't really This wasn't like soft tissue injuries derailed Quincy Anunua's career. This was a neck issue followed by another neck issue. And it reminded me a little bit of like when David Wilson's career abruptly came to a halt, the running back for the Giants, where there was so much talent there. There was so much potential. You saw the glimmers of what this guy could be. And then it all ends so soon. And when Anunua suffered that injury against the Bills, it was kind of like, you know what? When it's two neck injuries in 3 years, that usually signals the end of it. And I'm sure, I know he has expressed optimism. He wants to continue to play. If he can pass a physical, maybe another team gives him a shot. But I don't necessarily see that happening. And it is a shame that it kind of went this way. Now, as far as the release, Tim, yeah, you hit the nail on the head. This is just expert bookkeeping by Joe Douglas and the Jets. Really smart bookkeeping by Joe Douglas and the Jets. And I made some calls to some people over there that I know, just to kind of like explain it to me to make sure that I had this all done correctly. And really what the Jets did was that they while they had been having conversations, and Adam Gase referenced this when we talked to him on a conference call last Wednesday, Adam Gase had made reference that the Jets had been communicating with CJ Mosley, and they kind of had an idea that he was mulling the idea of sitting out this season and opting out because of, you know, COVID-related concerns. They weren't necessarily planning for it. They were still hoping that he was going to be around. Obviously, they had talked about that ad nauseum, about how great it's going to be to get him back. When he opted out, though, the Jets basically got $10 million of cap relief, which we talked about on the last podcast when Mosley opted out and we were breaking that down. When the Jets then decided to release Ryan Winters, they got another $7 million in cap space. So they basically came into, or I'm sorry, they got $7.5 million in cap space from Mosley opting out. They get $10 million in relief next year. They get the 7. Whatever million from Brian Winters. So they basically got like $14 million of cap space that they did not know they were going to have like that. Like immediately they got $14 million in relief. So what Joe Douglas decided to do, which is, again, forward thinking by a first year, well, I guess technically 1.5 year general manager, is he said, all right, I can sit on this cap space, or I can kind of better position myself for the 2020 offseason. So by the Jets releasing Quincy Anunua now, what they do is they take his $4.1 million that they owe him next year, which is guaranteed for injury, which he will get because he's not going to play football next year for injury-related reasons. That was going to be his dead charge for next year. They take that $4.1 million and they're paying it right now. So they're basically taking that $4.1 million, they're paying it for Quincy Anunua this year, in addition to his 2020 bonus, in addition to his 2020 prorated signing bonus and his 2020 base salary. So this year, Quincy Anunua technically has like a $12 million dead charge, or $11.5, $12 million dead charge. By releasing him now, though, the Jets are freeing up $4 million that they would not previously have had in 2021. Because if they had waited and they held on to Quincy Anunua all throughout this year, kept him on the injured reserve, then chose to release him after the season, they would have only freed like $100,000, because you would have had the I believe it's $3 million left from his prorated signing bonus, $1.5 million, I believe is what the number is, in 2021 and 2022. You would have technically gotten like $7 million in cap relief from the unguaranteed portion of his salary. But when you take the $4.1 million of that base salary that's guaranteed for injury, loop it in with his signing bonus, you're basically freeing $4.6 million, but you have a cap penalty of $4.5 million, so you're only going to free $100,000. So what the Jets did by releasing Quincy Anunua now is, like I said, they're freeing themselves up with $2 million, or $4 million extra in 2020 that they, or 2021 that they did not previously have, which is going to make things significantly better for them. And I'm just bringing up the numbers exactly right now, but it's going to make things extremely impactful for 2021 when the NFL salary cap, the team rated salary cap, is so in flux. If this season has no fans in the stands and everything goes as bad as possibly expected, there's a chance that the 2021 team salary cap is $175 million, right? So with a team salary cap of $175 million, the Jets are set to have now $34 million in salary cap space. Now, after these two releases, that $34 million doesn't seem like a lot, because everyone's now used to saying like, oh, this team has $80 million. This team has $70 million. The Jets this past year had like $100 million in salary cap space. Like you're like $34 million, that's nothing. But if the NFL team salary cap is down to $175 million next year, that $34 million for the Jets would be the sixth most in the NFL. They can jump to $42.2 million if they were to release Henry Anderson, right? And Henry Anderson, they're freeing like $8.5 million, which again, Henry Anderson is not moving the needle for the Jets. He hasn't been the signing that they expected him to be. Odds are he's going to get cut after this year anyway. So you release him with this move. You're getting the $10 million extra from CJ Mosley, which we talked about last week. Now you're getting $4 million extra from Quincy Nunn, which you weren't previously going to have. You're up to $34 million. You release Henry Anderson, you got $42.2 million. If you were to release Le'Veon Bell, that gives the Jets $51.7 million, which would be the second most in the NFL behind only the Indianapolis Colts, who are like made of money this next season with like $74.7 million because they're not paying their quarterback. They get all that money back from Andrew Luck. So this move by the Jets to release Quincy Enunwa was a little surprising at this point in time, but it's tremendous foresight. It's basically Joe Douglas saying, okay, I just came into $14 million that I did not anticipate having last week with this whole CJ Mosley thing happening and then releasing Brian Winters. Let's use it to better position ourselves for next year. Let's get rid of the player that we know we're not going to see this year. Use the money that previously was just going to be sitting there for us, and we'll basically pick up an extra $4.5 million in 2020. It was extremely smart by Joe Douglas to do. And the story's over in The Athletic breaking everything down after talking to some people over there really explaining it. And I thought it was smart by the Jets. It was smart front officing, if that's a verb, by this team.
It is smart and it makes sense. But from a fan's perspective, you look at all this and you say, okay, you know, you want to give Joe Douglas time. Obviously, he inherited a mess. He's trying to clean it up. Yeah. But on the other hand, you just want to see a team win football games at some point. And it feels like this is the can being kicked down the road a little more. And you're like, okay, so we have a lot of money next year now. We have a lot of picks coming up next year. But Shiel Kapadia had his rankings out this week, and the Jets check in at 30th in offense and 29th in defense. And just look on paper, yeah, like one of the worst teams in the NFL. So I think there's a frustration, too, while you get it, that there's smart moves being made here by Joe Douglas for the future. It's like this is a franchise that, from a fan base perspective, feels like, yeah, everyone's always just pointing to the future, and it's never about now.
Yeah, and I actually did a hit with Sirius NFL radio or something like that, like after the Jamal Adams trade, and they asked me that. They were like, well, what does like the Jet fan have to look forward to, like, into that, like, what are they hanging their hat on? And I was like, yeah, I feel like shit saying this because it's been the same thing that I've been telling Jet fans for like the last 3 or 4 years, and it's like the future and the hope, right? the future and the hope and blah 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 blah, right? Like that's the thing, that's literally the shit I've been saying for like the last 4 years, and eventually it's like, F that, man. Yeah. Like screw that. Like, I don't give a shit about the future anymore. Like, win some goddamn football games. Like, I don't care. Like, you know, it gets tiring. Like, dude, I've been very clear in the past. I am not a Jets fan. Covering a team that loses like 10, 11, 12 games every year is not freaking fun. Like, it really beats you up, too, because the players are miserable. The coaches are miserable. You're going to have to deal with a coaching search. Like, it's just not, it's not fun. Like, you want to cover a team that wins because then the fans are in a good mood and they're reading everything you write. The player's in a good mood in the locker room. The coach is in a good mood. Like, everyone's in a good mood, and it makes covering the team fun. It's not fun to cover a team that loses all the time. So, like, it beats up reporters, too, when it's like, oh, my God, it's going to be another season where this team's going to be losing, another season where this team's going to suck. And, it does. It beats you up. But, unfortunately, that's kind of what you're selling. Now, I do believe that the Jets will be a better team this year than they were last year, because I think their offensive line is significantly improved. I think that they should be. At least they're improved on paper. I don't think they're the Dallas Cowboys offensive line or the Philadelphia Eagles offensive line of 2017 when they won a Super Bowl. But I do believe that this offensive line is better and could, if everything goes as Joe Douglas believes it can go with this front five, I think you have a grouping that could teeter on being good. They're not going to be great. They're not going to be amazing. But I think they have the chance to be good if everything goes according to plan. Mekhi Becton is a guy that could be, if he progresses, an all-pro left tackle. I think Alex Lewis is a very serviceable left guard. Connor McGovern, a very serviceable center. I like what the Jets have there at right guard with Greg Van Roten. I think he's the perfect fit for Adam Gase's offense. And again, if Font's kind of like that wild card where he's as good as the Jets believe, you're talking about a guy in Font that could now be a legitimate option at right tackle. And the Jets do have a pretty serviceable option, too, behind him in Chuma Adaga, who they believe that if he mentally checks in and he mentally wants it, he's a guy that can be a very, very good offensive lineman. He just mentally needs to want it. And to this point, he hasn't mentally wanted it. You know what I mean? Like, the Jets don't know yet if Chuma is going to be willing to say, yes, I want to be the best I can be. I'm going to put in all the extra effort. Or if Chuma's just going to be like, hey, I play in the NFL. This is kind of cool. And just kind of like cruise. And he can cruise and have a 10-year career as a backup. or he can really commit himself and he can be a Pro Bowl player. Like, he has that much talent. So I think that the offensive line's better. That's going to help the Jets. Sam Darnold going into year three, that should make a legitimate difference. The defense, I know, is without C.J. Mosley, but the Jets survived without C.J. Mosley. I know the defense is without Jamal Adams, but I think Bradley McDougal and Ashton Davis and with Greg Williams as your defensive coordinator, I think he can scheme things around where while you can't replace Jamal Adams and you cannot replace Jamal Adams' production and the Jets' defense is not better with Jamal Adams not on it because he's an all-pro player, I think that the defense can still survive and be a good unit. And that, along with an offense that's going to be better, I am concerned with the receiving core. That's something I have a legitimate concerns with top to bottom, and I think we're going to address it when we get to the mailbag portion of this thing. Like, I have issues. I have serious concerns with the corner, the wideout position, very much like I had concerns with the center position last year. But I think that this Jets team is going to be better, and if they compete and they play hard, and I think that the one thing, too, is that this locker room is going to be galvanized by the fact that there are no stars in there. With Jamal Adams gone, there is no superstar there that's going to be the me first, look at me player. I want to be the Pro Bowl. I want to break this record. It's going to be a lot of players that are all in this together, and I think you're going to see the Jets in 2020 have much more of a team than they had in 2019, 18, 17. Like, this is going to be a team, and they'll be galvanized together by people counting them out. And I think they have a chance to win some games this year. I don't think they're going to be 12-4, 13-3, but they have a chance to get to that 8-win total. And if they get to 8 wins, you're close to 9 wins. And if you get to 9 wins with the extra wild card spot, you could be in the playoffs. You never know. So if Sam Darnold takes that next step, I think that's the biggest X factor. But I think the Jets are going to be a better team this year. And with the Jets being a better team this year, I think that's something that the Jets can hang their hat on. And what you can really hang your hat on is that I don't think that this is like 2017 where the Jets blew everything up and you were like, this team's tanking. The Jets aren't tanking this year. Like, that's not what they're doing. They have a team that they're going to try to win football games with. And what you can say is that this year they have an outside chance of making the playoffs. If everything goes according to plan and they can get to 9 wins, maybe even 8 wins, they have a chance of stealing that final wild card spot in the AFC. Next year, then, you're going to be in a position where the Jets don't really have anyone to pay other than Sam Darnold in another year. They don't have any me first players. They're going to have top 5 cap space amongst everyone in the NFL. This is going to be a free agent class that, I again, it's in the story that's published on The Athletic if you want to go look at it. There is a sizable amount of teams that are going to have to cut a lot of players to get under the $175 million cap space. The Jets are in the minority. The fact that they actually have any cap space whatsoever, let alone among the most in the NFL, they're in the minority of the NFL teams right now there. A lot of these other teams are going to have to cut players to get under the cap. So there are going to be a lot of noticeable, solid veterans out there on the free agent market that the Jets are going to be able to go out there and get. So you're going to have an option here of a ton of cap space, 2 first-round picks, a ton more all the way when you talk about rounds 1 through 4. You can reinvent the roster there. You've got this draft class, which Joe Douglas is very high on, an offensive line that continues to get better, and you're going to have cap space to spend money on free agents, where while this isn't the competing year, I think you can say, okay, this is a year you expect the Jets to turn the corner. And if they start to turn that corner, you know they're going to go into an offseason where Douglas is going to be very aggressive and make a run. And that's kind of what you got to hang your hat on. I know it sucks that it's like, oh, future, future, future. Still, I mean, this team, this has been the longest goddamn rebuild I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, they've been rebuilding this goddamn thing since 2016. Like, it is freaking ridiculous. Like, how long they've been rebuilding this team. But still, I think that it's something that you can hang your hat on, that, like, you finally believe that you've got the GM in place. If you don't have the coach in place, it's not going to be a complete rebuild. Joe Douglas will find the next head coach. You've got the quarterback, and that's more than what the Jets have had in the past, and now you're just waiting for them to piece the rest of this thing together. Mike McCagan really just effed this roster with how atrocious he was at drafting. Like, that's what this all honestly comes back to. And that's a question for another day. Maybe we'll get asked about it and we can expand on it more. But this whole, like, shitstorm that the Jets are in right now, it's because Mike McCagan could not freaking draft. Like, there's one, like, he has no one from 2015, and I think he's now out of players from 2016 and one from 2017. So, like, the guy drafted horrifically. And when you don't hit on any draft picks for, like, 4 years running, you're going to be in this position that the Jets are in.
That's the positivity we're looking for here on the podcast. Speaking of drafting, though, that brings up a good point, because next year's draft is looking like it's going to be really interesting and really difficult for NFL teams, because as we record this, there's all these rumors swirling around about the college football season. The Mid-American Conference officially canceled on Saturday. They're hoping to play in the spring. And now we hear about the Big Ten pushing all the other Power Five conferences to possibly postpone things till the spring, if not cancel altogether. So that brings up so many questions. One, if they do play in the spring, do you move the NFL draft to make sure you get the college football season in beforehand? But there's also the players that are opting out. Greg Russo, Miami edge rusher, is opting out. He's not going to play this year. Micah Parsons, the linebacker from Penn State. These are top 10 picks that you're not going to get that final season to kind of review and see how they've developed and see where they're heading. It's going to certainly be a challenge. I mean, it's the same challenge for everybody, but the Jets have a lot of picks and they really need to hit these, and it's going to be tricky.
Oh, it's going to be hard. I think it's a challenge. Now, the one thing that I can say is that when teams scout players, and I remember talking to Mike McKagan about, maybe don't want to listen to this considering how well this strategy paid out. But when teams scout, they do their homework on the juniors. Like, so for example, like this season, the Jets would be scouting a bunch of the juniors, like spending a lot of time on the juniors, the guys that might declare themselves for the draft. Their scouting reports on the seniors that are now coming out were done their junior years, and it kind of basically allows you to constantly have that. And you have to obviously change, like when you have the kid that the breakout junior that suddenly you kind of go back to your report and maybe you talk to some other people and you finalize some more things if a guy that you didn't expect to break out breaks out or things like that. But where it's going to be harmful is those juniors. Now, as far as moving the draft back, it's all going to come down to when is the college season actually going to be played, this, that, the other thing. Are they going to get the combine? Are they going to have – like that's a question for another day. But I think what you are – you did hit the nail on the head where it's going to be a challenge. And the ones that are going to be – the ones that are going to be really downgraded are the kids that you see drafted top 10, top 20 so high every year because of their junior seasons and they declare. Even the seniors, too. Like, the seniors that come out of nowhere and have a play. Mekhi Becton was not going to be a top 15 pick until he had this past season at Louisville. And that's when everything kind of came together for him. Before this, he was kind of considered lazy, and they didn't know if he was ever going to take the next step. He was just, like, a big height, weight, speed guy. That's it. Like, you didn't know he was going to do what he did. And you see that with players every single year. So, it's going to be a challenge, not necessarily for the seniors, like the kids that you know are studs. But at the same time, you also do find the kids that you think are studs going from their sophomore year to their junior year, and suddenly they kind of fall apart. Christian Hackenberg, for example. Like, imagine if your only film that you were going off of Christian Hackenberg was his freshman year, and then he didn't play his sophomore year because of a global pandemic. That dude's not a second-round pick. That dude's a top-five pick. That's what you're looking at, right? I mean, like, that guy's going to be – and then look what happened. Like, Christian's sophomore year, his junior year. Like, that's when things fell apart for him, and it was like, oh, boy, maybe he's not the player he wanted, and the only team that was going to draft him in the second round was the Jets, and everyone else was going to pick him in like the fourth, fifth. But like that, like that's the kind of thing, is you have players that it goes both ways. You have the players that everyone assumes are going to be studs. All of a sudden, something happens their junior year, and you're like, I don't know what's going on here. Like, this is maybe pull this one back a little bit. We need to reevaluate this guy. You also have the guys that were nobodies really that come out of nowhere, and you're like, hold, like the Mekhi Becton. You're like, wow, this guy now isn't just a top. This guy isn't just a first round pick. He's not top 11. Like, you have these guys every single year that come out, and the ones that are going to be at a true disadvantage are going to be the juniors, because they're just going off their sophomore film. For a lot of these guys, you're not coming into your home until your junior year. So they're missing that sophomore season. So what you wonder then is that, are you going to have a huge portion of a junior class that you're going to be like, wow, this kid's going to clear, this kid's going to clear, that they're going to say, nah, I'm going back for my, now going to be my my senior year. I didn't play my junior year. I'm going to go back for my senior year. So it's going to be, is it going to be a senior heavy? I mean, there are a lot of concerns, which is why I think in the conference call with Joe Douglas that we had after the Jamal Adams trade, Bob Glauber, who's the PFWA president and covers the NFL. He's literally covered the NFL since I've been alive. Like, I think it's like first year on the beat was the year that I was born in 92, which I always like bringing up to him. But he actually asked Joe Douglas the question, which I thought was brilliant. And he said it was like, Joe, with this uncertainty on the college football season, did you contemplate these first round picks for Jamal not being 2021, but being 21-22, and saying basically like delay it a year and know that, okay, we might be missing on this year's class, but we're going to get at least a full normal evaluation in 21 that we were not going to have this year if they cancel college football. And Joe kind of said, you know, the cliche typical answer you'd get from a GM, which is like, oh, we trust our scouting department, we trust this, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. And so what I read between the lines was that, like, the Jets don't have the luxury of continuing to push this thing back. They got, like, we were just talking about, Tim, they have to start winning football games. They have to start winning this now. They can't keep like next year. Eventually it has to be this year, and they're just going to have to deal with this and find a way to make it work. And if Joe's the evaluator that the Jets believe, and everyone else for that matter, and a lot of these other guys that they have are the evaluators that the Jets believe, and they believe they have this strong scouting department, then they should be able to overcome this. But the one positive in this whole thing is that this isn't a Jets problem. This is a league problem, and everyone's going to be dealing with this. It's not like it's just the Jets.
All right, before we get to the mailbag, let's take a quick break for one of our sponsors. This is a sponsor that I've really been looking forward to reading this one live on YouTube, Connor. We're going to get into it. Manscaped. It is summertime. The beaches are starting to open up, and when you're socially distancing on the beach, you want your post-quarantine body ready for the wild. This is the best trimmer on the market for those of you in need of a chest shave. This third-generation trimmer features skin-safe technology to reduce manscaping accidents. You can also adjust settings to get a length that you like, and you can also stay on top of it with almost no effort at all. Subscribe to the perfect package and get a new blade refill for your lawnmower trimmer delivered to your door every 3 months. Inside the perfect package, you'll also find the Manscaped Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing ball deodorant, and moisturizer, because we know how painful chafing can be when you're wearing your bathing suit all day long. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code THEATHLETIC at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com, and use the code THEATHLETIC. And for a limited time, subscribers get not one, but two free gifts. The Shed Travel Bag, that's a $39 value, and the patented high-performance anti-chafing Manscaped Boxer Briefs. So go to manscaped.com today and use code THEATHLETIC. All right, and with that, on to the mailbag.
Well done getting through that. Look at you.
Straight
you
face
are
the whole time. That's right.
I am impressed. Like, forget that. There was no hiccup. There was, man, when I have to do these reads with you guys, we usually do them like post-recording. Now we're doing them all live. When I have to do these reads, like, I take like three tests. Like, I got to like break it up into space. I got to go through, read it. Man, that was, you powered through that thing. I'm impressed.
Thanks, Connor. I appreciate it. That's why you're keeping me around.
Manscaped. Everyone's got to go get the Manscaped. I obviously don't. Like, that is not, that's like, look, I can barely get a connection going here. Like, I get this and I get here and that's it. And there's no hair on my chest either. That's something that the Hughes gene did not get.
Well, nothing in that read about golf bods. So I think you're all right.
Yeah. I'm down though. I've heard that before. I hear they're pretty legit. Like I said, for the, my hairier brethrens, I'm sure that it'll be better. I've been trying to grow a quarantine beard and it's going miserable. Ugh, terrible. I just need to get this connection here. I got no connection here and none here. So this is the best I got, is a chin strap. It's terrible.
All right. And with that, Marissa, let's move on to the mailbag.
All right. There's no natural transition off of that. So we just talked about the college football season. Michael Christopher says, if there is no college football, will NFL change the schedule and have Saturday day and night games to go along with Sunday, Monday, and Thursday? A Saturday night game would get huge ratings probably.
Yeah, look, I'll be honest with you. If the NFL's playing games, they're going to have an issue with ratings. Like, everyone and their uncle is going to be watching this, because for all intents and purposes, it doesn't seem like this thing's ending anytime soon. Like, this quarantine isn't like, oh, we're going to, like, it's funny is that when we were first talking about, like, this quarantine, I remember talking with friends and being like, oh, like, you know, no, we definitely need to lock down. You know, it's we're going to be locked down for the long haul until June. And like, that was like, the talk was like, we're going to be in lockdown until June, and then everything will be back to normal. And now it's August and it's like, no, we're still going through. And then you wonder if there's going to be a second, all this fun pandemic stuff, which we don't have to get into obviously here. But I think that whatever time an NFL game goes on, everyone and their uncle's going to be watching it. You're probably going to be getting even better ratings because fans aren't going to be in the stands. So all of those people are going to be watching the games. And I do think that that is something that they will consider. And you think about it, like, towards the end of every NFL season, they play Saturday games. Once college football is over, they start putting Saturday games on, and I think they will start putting Saturday primetime games on. So you'll have a Saturday primetime, Sunday normal slate, Sunday night, Monday night, Thursday night, and it'll just, the NFL is going to do everything they can to rake in additional revenue, and I think that that's a way that they can do it. It's certainly something I would consider. I don't know if you're going to have one like every day of the week, but I think Saturday will be something that they look to put it on. I don't think they'll go Friday, because if you go Friday in addition to Thursday, in addition to Saturday and Sunday and Monday, you're going to start having teams that are like, okay, this team just played Sunday. Now they're playing on Friday, but this team that also they're playing on Friday played a Thursday night. So they had, like, it's just going to be so much scheduling gymnastics that I think if you add in two extra days, that's going to be a little much. But yeah, I could absolutely see some games being moved to Saturday to take advantage of that. Which would be fun too, man. You think about it, like, with people, like, Sunday Night Football, I remember, like, people who watch it as fans, everyone's got work Monday morning, so it's kind of tough to, like, enjoy it, you know, crack a six pack and, like, you know, get after it with your friends and enjoy watching it. Like, you can't really do that on a Sunday because you know you got work Monday morning, unless you can recover much, much better than I can. And if you have a Saturday game, though, there's no work on Sunday, so you can really have some fun. And I think it would add a different dynamic to it. So I think it's definitely something they'll consider. And I think it's a smart idea. And I think it's really only a matter of time, especially if there's no college football.
Yeah, and I think Friday night's also still a little bit sacred for the high school football, which there may be in some parts of the country. I think it'll probably be a mix. There'll be some places that play high school football and some don't. But Saturday, I mean, imagine just a doubleheader every Saturday the entire season. The question will be, how do you figure that out from a TV standpoint? Which networks get those games, and does it rotate? Do you pick the games? Do the networks get to pick the games? Obviously, a ton to figure out, but I think if the news about college football comes out in the next few days, there'll be enough time for the NFL to work that out and figure it out. It'll be really cool. All right, next one's from Michael Palace. He says, of these three receiving targets, who do you think is the most important to the success of Sam Darnold in 2020? Christopher Herndon, Le'Veon Bell, and Jamison Crowder.
I'll go with, honestly, none of the above. I'll say Denzel Mims is the most important. And the reason why I say that is because Jamison Crowder is a great safety blanket for Sam. And I think that you've kind of saw, look, Jamison Crowder could be 100 catch, 1,200 yard slot receiver, similar to he won't be as good as Wes Welker, but similar to what Wes Welker was for, like, Tom Brady and stuff like that. But that's what he is. He's a slot receiver. In no offense in the NFL is your slot receiver your number one guy. You think about some of the best slot receivers, there was always somebody outside of him. Think about Wes Welker when he was in Denver. There was Demaryius Thomas. Victor Cruz, when he had his breakout with the Giants, he had a healthy Hakeem Nicks who was making a difference. Like, there's always Wes Welker in New England, he had Randy Moss outside. Like, a slot receiver and a dominant slot receiver is a very good attribute to an offense, and it's a very good addition to an offense, but it's not your, it can't be your number one target. Like that player can't be your go-to number one guy. You need to have somebody outside. Denzel Mims is the guy that has the potential to be Sam Darnold's go-to. He has the potential to be Sam Darnold's number one, the guy that is the X factor, the difference maker, who can take the top off the defense, run nice routes. Like, he is the guy too, at his age, that can grow with Sam, and they can be that quarterback wide receiver connection that just, like, they're together and they make it work. You know, the ones that are like, you give the young quarterback a number one guy, and they grow together and they learn together, and the wideout makes the quarterback's life easier. And I also think that because Denzel's coming in as a rookie after your quarterback, you're not going to have the issue like sometimes when you pair a big personality wide receiver with a younger quarterback who suddenly it kind of disrupts the quarterback's maturity because he's like, throw me the ball. Like what might happen with Odell Beckham and Baker Mayfield, where you're getting such a big personality that now suddenly Baker's got to worry about constantly keeping Odell happy because Sam's already here and established. Denzel's going to be coming in as your, like, X factor. So like they mentioned, Herndon is going to be a difference maker. He's a guy that could be the Jets' Travis Kelce. But even you think about Travis Kelce with the Chiefs, they still got Tyreek Hill. So you need that number one receiver. And I don't think that's going to be, obviously, Le'Veon Bell is a running back. Chris Herndon can be a huge part of this offense and a staple for this offense. And Jamison Crowder is a very good weapon in the slot. But the Jets need that number one receiver. And so for the most important player, it's going to be Denzel, because Denzel has that potential to develop and become that number one guy for the Jets. It's a little curveball there.
No, that answers Aaron's question about how big of an impact Mims will have on this offense. So there you go, Aaron.
No, but here's the thing, though. I don't know how big of an impact Denzel is going to have, or I don't know how big of an impact Mims is going to have his rookie year. Like, because rookie receivers, like, it takes time for not every rookie receiver is DK Metcalf. You know what I mean? Like that kid that the Eagles drafted, Arcega Whiteside, he was drafted before Metcalf, if I'm not mistaken. The kid did nothing last year. Like it takes time, and that was a Joe Douglas pick. So it takes time for young wideouts to grasp the NFL offense, and it's not as difficult as it once was. And I actually remember talking, I did a story when I first started covering the NFL. I wrote for, like, when I was first getting my initial clips, I was writing covering the Giants for Big Blow Interactive, and I remember writing a story about, I think it was Mario Manningham It might have been Mario Manningham or another young receiver that the Giants had drafted. Maybe even Akeem had a good rookie year. I think it was Mario Manningham who had like a slow rookie year and then kind of caught on year two and three. And I ran into Amani Toomer at like a broadcasting convention in Atlantic City. And I was like, oh, I was like, he's a former Giants receiver. I'll do like a story on him. And I remember talking to him about wide receivers and their like why some wideouts take long to make the jump to the NFL and others don't. And this was right around the time you were starting to see that change. Because before, wideouts used to take like 1 or 2 years to learn an NFL offense, and then you'd see them make a difference in year three. And Toomer had said, he goes, you know, like, it's not running routes. Like, playing receiver in the NFL is not running routes. You need to be able to read a defense just like a quarterback would. Because he was talking about Kevin Gilbride's offense at the time. He goes, when I go into Kevin Gilbride's offense, I go to the line of scrimmage with 4 different routes. And when I go into that offense with 4 different routes, I need to know which of those 4 routes I'm going to run based on that coverage. The route that I pick has to also be the same route that the quarterback sees and identifies as well, so that we can be on the same timing and page, run the same thing. It's a timing route. He throws it, and it's a completion, not an interception going the other way. He goes, so it takes time for wideouts. He goes, now, why you're seeing it start to change is that previously, when I first started coming up in the NFL, coaches and offensive coordinators, they had 4 or 5 years to build their team. If you're a coach and you don't get it going in year two, you're going to get fired. If Adam Gase goes 4-12 this year, he's not going to be here in 2021. So coaches have had to change their offenses to make it easier to understand and easier for these young guys to come in and pick up right away. Otherwise, they're not going to have success. The team's not going to have success, and the coach is getting fired. So that's why you're seeing guys like Metcalf and guys like Odell Beckham, his rookie year, and Mike Evans, his rookie year, though those two guys are freaks. You're seeing those guys come in their rookie years and have massive impact. So you're seeing offenses change where they're easier to digest for a rookie to be able to come in and have an impact. But still, there are some guys that need a little extra time to get that done, a little bit of extra time to figure everything out. I don't know if Denzel is going to be the guy that's super, super pro ready, or if he's going to be somebody that maybe doesn't catch on until the second half of the year. You don't know. So Denzel is most important to Sam, but I don't know if Denzel is going to have a massive 2020 impact. And honestly, when we finally start to be able to see practices soon and you see this guy working with the ones and you see how he's playing in training camp, that's when you'll kind of be able to tell what kind of an early impact he's going to have.
All right. This one is from Howard Goldman. There's a lot of Gase questions. Predict the Jets' division record. All 6 are winnable. He says, to me, if Gase goes 2-4 or worse, it will be big trouble for him and his staff. What are your thoughts?
Well, I guess you can answer that. Just, it's tough to predict division games, but I guess you can just kind of peg where the Jets are within the division, right? Like, you can peg where the Jets fall. I don't think the Jets are a better team than the Buffalo Bills. I think, and then we can go back and debate like Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, blah, blah, blah. I think Sam Darnold's a better quarterback than Josh Allen. I think Josh Allen is more higher ceiling, but I think that Sam is a better overall quarterback right now just because he's better accurately, or he's better accuracy. I think, you know, similar when play breaks down, but they're close, but I just think Sam Darnold is Sam's a safer quarterback than Josh Allen. I think Sam is a safer quarterback, but despite that, the Bills offensive line, the Bills receiving core, the Bills defense, the Bills secondary, Bills are a better team than the Jets, top to bottom, even if the Jets have a slight edge at quarterback, and it is that. It's just a slight edge, and I think the Bills are a better team. So the Jets always seem to play the Bills tight. They usually seem to be in it with them whenever those two teams play, and then someone just kind of squeaks out and pulls out the victory. So I don't know if I don't think the Jets get swept by them. I think they'll probably win one from the Bills, but if they get swept by the Bills are a better team. I think the Jets are probably on par with the Patriots now that Tom Brady's gone. I think that the Jets, even with Cam Newton as the Patriots quarterback, I think the Jets are probably as good of a team as the Patriots are. I don't think the Jets are better. I don't think they're significantly worse. I think that they're probably right on the money. And then with the Dolphins, I think the Jets are probably like 1 year ahead of where the Dolphins are. Like, where the Dolphins are right now is where the Jets were supposed to be last year. I'm throwing my pen everywhere. This is where the Jets were last year. So I think the Jets are a better team than the Patriots. I think that they're a better team than the Dolphins. I think that they are not as good as the Buffalo Bills. With that said, I think that the Dolphins are a team that the Dolphins are going to be a better team in week 8 than they are in week 1. When Tua starts getting going, when some of these young guys start coming along, when this team starts gelling with all the new pieces, the Dolphins have a chance of being a better team than the Jets in week 8 than they are in week 1. I think the Patriots are the team that everyone's going to eventually surpass, and the division could very well end Bills won in terms of teams that are like their talent could easily end with Bills as number one team, Dolphins as number two, Jets as number three, and then the Patriots as number four. Could very easily shake that out if two was as good as people expect. So for the division record, I think the Jets could go anywhere from, I don't think they'll go 4-2 in the division, but I think they could go like 3-3 maybe, something like that. I think they could, they should, they could easily sweep the Dolphins if Tua doesn't come along as cope, because Greg Williams is a mastermind just deflating rookie quarterbacks. Like, he is ridiculous when he's asked to build a defense for a rookie quarterback. He'll drive all of them mad. So I think that that's going to benefit the Jets this year against Tua. I don't know if I trust Cam Newton to even stay healthy. And if that's the case, Jared Stidham is going to come in for the Patriots. I don't know. And then with the Bills, if they get swept. So I think that probably 3-3 is probably where I could see the Jets in the division. I don't think they'll go 2-4. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think 2-4 in the division is going to be a determining factor. And if Adam Gase comes back, but I also don't believe that this team will go 2-4 in the division. I think they're going to win one, potentially two from the Patriots. I think they'll win at least one or two from the Dolphins, and then they'll probably steal one from the Bills at some point. The only team I think the Jets could potentially get swept by is the Bills. And I think if that's the case, then, you know, whatever, the Bills are a better team.
Yeah, it feels like 3-3 to me also. I would like writing it down real quick, right? You think 2-0 against the Dolphins, 0-2 Bills, 1-1 Patriots, maybe that gets you to 3-3 or something like that. The problem with 3-3 though is that the non-division schedule for the Jets is so tough that you almost feel like if they go 3-3 in the division, there's really no hope for this team overall. But you know, we'll have to see. 4-2 would obviously be a huge lift, but there's going to be an upset along the way there, and I can't imagine them beating Belichick twice. But we'll certainly see. We have a bunch more actually, but one more before we take a little break. If the Jets go 4-12, which is kind of goes into the same sort of thing, Darnold does not take that step forward, Gase, do the Jets think about taking a quarterback with their first pick? I think I know your answer. You knew this one was coming.
I thought this was a Gase question. I think actually Marissa read this one, and when Marissa was actually given some of these questions beforehand, she was like, hey, we're thinking about asking this one. Like, these are some of the questions that came in. And as soon as you read the first portion of that question, I immediately zoned off. I was like, are they going to fire Adam Gase? And be like, yeah, I did not see that one.
You don't listen to me, Connor? Oh,
I listened to like the first 45 seconds. I was like, it's after that. I was like, okay, I know. All right, next question. And then I hadn't had my super coffee yet. So I wasn't like totally all there. So I was like, all right, yeah, this is a Gase question. I did not see that. That is a fascinating question. And that is something that I don't think 4-12 puts the Jets within the first two picks of the draft. So to answer that question completely, 4-12 probably has that team drafting 6, 7, 8. And if that's the case, I don't necessarily know if they would consider quarterback yet. Like, Sam would have to be terrible. He would have to be terrible this year. And I think that would then all of a sudden you start thinking about trading up. I think the fascinating part of this is, say, like, the Jets' schedule is hard, right? Like, it is. And we're talking about them winning 7, 8, 9 games and competing for the playoffs. But if this offensive line goes the other way, Connor McGovern's just okay. Alex Lewis gets hurt like he has every year. Mekhi Becton isn't ready to play. George Font, Chuma Adaga aren't there. The receivers are as bad as people expect, and the defense is just a complete loss without C.J. Mosley and Jamal Adams. And say this team goes 3-13, and they're picking 1 or 2 in the draft. That is going, and Sam Darnold regresses like you got. That is going to be a fascinating situation to watch play out, because now you have, if that happens, Adam Gase is not keeping his job. So now you're going to have a new coach. Joe Douglas is not tied to Sam Darnold. Joe Douglas did not draft Sam Darnold. I know Joe Douglas valued Sam Darnold highly. They had him ranked pretty highly. In fact, when Sam, and I can tell you this story too, when Joe Douglas was with the Eagles, Joe Douglas and Howie Roseman were in that war room basically saying, when the Giants were up at number two, please take Saquon Barkley. Please take Saquon Barkley. Please take Saquon Barkley. Because they did not want to see Sam Darnold twice a year for the next 15 years. Like, they did not want that to happen. So they were in that war room in Philadelphia saying, please take Saquon. Please take Saquon. Please take Saquon. And when they took Saquon, they were high-fiving each other like, sweet, we just avoided playing Sam Darnold twice a year. So the Jets did value Sam Darnold, or Joe Douglas did value Sam Darnold very highly. He had a high report on him back when he was in Philly, even though they had Wentz and they knew they were not going to be drafting Sam Darnold. They valued him so highly, they did not want him in the NFC East. With that said, that would be 3 years of an up-and-down rookie year, an up-and-down year two, both rookie and sophomore year dealing with injuries, and now a regression in year three. you can blame the receivers, you can blame the offensive line, you can blame coaching, but if you're in one or two position, drafting position one or two, and Trevor Lawrence is there, that's going to be a significant conversation to be had within the Jets war room, because Trevor Lawrence is a better quarterback prospect than Tua, is a better quarterback prospect than Joe Burrow, is a better quarterback prospect than Josh Allen or Baker Mayfield or Sam Darnold. This guy is probably the best quarterback prospect that has come out of the draft since Andrew Luck. And if you have a chance to draft him and you are uncertain on Sam Darnold, you might have that conversation, and I think it needs to be a conversation that you have. This, again, this is assuming Sam Darnold takes a big step back in year three, of could we trade Sam Darnold for a second or a third round pick to a team that still believes they can fix him, get another second or third rounder, so now you have the first rounder that you can draft Trevor Lawrence, another first rounder in the same draft, a 2-3-3. Like, you're going to have so many draft picks if you were now to flip Sam Darnold for a pick that it needs to be a conversation. But again, there are a lot of things that are happening. Also, I think Sam Darnold's a good player. So, like, I don't, it's tough to, like, talk about that, because I think that you're going to see a good quarterback this year, and you're going to see a guy take the next step, and you're going to see a guy that people believe is a franchise quarterback. You have it in year one and two. I've talked to enough people where you believe that's going to happen in year three. But if I'm wrong, and I'm certainly wrong enough where this is totally possible, and the Jets go 3-13, and you've got a new coach and Joe Douglas and all that stuff, drafting Trevor Lawrence is not out of the question. But again, ooh, it would take the Jets picking one or two. It would take all of those things we talked about. Finishing 3-13, Adam Gase is fired, Sam Darnold looks terrible this year, and you're like, I don't think he's a franchise quarterback. And then Trevor Lawrence is there organically with one of those two picks. I think that's when it comes into question. If the Jets are picking like 6 or 7, I don't think it's a consideration. I think they stick with Sam.
All right, we have to take another quick break. Connor, have you cut the cord yet? Have you cut the cable cord?
I haven't, just because of sports. But now that there's 4K streaming, I'm considering it. I'll be honest with you.
You got to consider it. And when you do, consider Fubo TV, because they're taking a huge step. And it's an incredible product for cord cutters looking for great live sports action. And if you get the family plan, it gets even better, because then you can have three people watching at once on different screens, watching different things. Standard base plan comes with two screens as well, which is probably good enough, Connor, for you and Bree to be watching whatever you guys want to be watching. You can get right now 15% off your first month of Fubo TV. It comes with 30 hours of DVR as well, and you get your local broadcast channels as well. It's tough to beat it. You think about how much you can pay on cable right now. It's just $50 a month right now for Fubo, plus you can make that savings as well. Really fits into anybody's budget right now. NBC Sports also included on the national feed. With the NFL season around the corner, it's even a better time to join Fubo.tv. They won't disappoint you. Stay updated on your favorite teams as well as local broadcast news. Go to Fubo.tv/athletic today, and you can get 15% off that first month. You won't regret it. That's Fubo.tv/athletic. Start your first month today. So there you go, Connor. You go do that today.
Tim's crushing these reads. Don't ever give them to me. Give them all to Tim. I'm not doing reads, man.
You're crushing the questions, Connor. You're answering some good
questions.
There we
go. Yeah, I know my strengths and my weaknesses. That's
the big question, though, is did I get to 60 seconds there, Marissa?
Yes.
Oh, you're trying to hit the break now.
You did.
Yes. Yeah, what? Oh, you're trying to hit it now. Wow. Yeah. I remember that from radio. I remember being in radio and having to deal with that. What is it called? Is it hitting the break or hitting
the pole? Hitting the pole. Yeah. Right?
I remember talking about that. I worked in radio for a year or two, and I remember dealing with that and being like, wow, God, I forget that my old program director is going to kick my ass for not remembering the hit or something. I remember the reads, and you had to hit, like, you had the little talk bed, and it had, like, the talk bed audio, and then it would be, like, when we would do reads, like, so it was an EDM station, so it would have, like, the 20-second intro, and we'd have to get in a certain, like, 20-second read within that 20-second intro, and the goal was, like, your final word is when the lyrics of the song would kick. And like when you would hit, it'd be like, let's go, man, let's go. Big use that does me now, though, considering I'm definitely not in radio. I did not like EDM, by the way. That was not, EDM was a little rough. That was a little rough for me to sound excited about. I'm like a rock and roll country fan, and trying to act excited about EDM was put on my poker.
That's actually a great reminder that if anybody wants to get some questions in for you about your musical taste, feel free. We're not all football here on Can't Wait.
Yeah, right, it's now true. Yeah, we were talking about this. Like, I said to Marissa, I was like, if any video game questions come in, or like Marvel and
we got a few of those at the bottom, but I'm gonna have I got a good transition here. So what fans are gonna be excited for this year is Mekhi Becton, And James Ash wants to know, no preseason games and limited contact in camp will make it difficult for the coaches to assess Becton's readiness for left tackle duties in the NFL. Do you think Font starts the season at left tackle to allow Becton to ease into his NFL career at right tackle?
No, I think Becton's going to be your left tackle. I think they're going to go with Becton at left. I know the Jets told Font when they signed him he could play left tackle, but they did that before they drafted Becton. Like, they didn't know Becton was going to be there. They didn't know if, like, drafting where they weren't sure if all three top offensive tackles were going to be gone, and they weren't going to have one. Like, the Jets didn't know that. So they, when they signed Font, they were like, yeah, you can play left tackle. I think it's going to end up being, and like, I talked to somebody who's very familiar with Font in Seattle, was one of the guys that helped bring him along, one of the guys that's evaluated him throughout his time in Seattle. And he was telling me after the Jets signed him, I called him. I was like, tell me about Font, because I know nothing about this guy. Like, I don't know who George Font is. I was like, I kind of heard the name, but the Jets seem high on him, but who is he? And the guy, again, who has evaluated him and spent a lot of time evaluating, is saying this guy is he's an intelligent guy. He's somebody that you're going to love talking to. He's a great person. They're like, our biggest issue with him in Seattle is that he was a developmental project that never had the chance to develop, because he was in line to be our starting left tackle, suffered basically a season-ending injury, and then we traded for Dwayne Brown. So Dwayne Brown's now our left tackle, and now we were trying to find a spot for Font, and he played some right tackle, he played some tight end, he played fullback, we moved him all around. He never got a chance to learn one position. He's like, if the Jets are going to give him a chance to learn one position, you're going to get the best George Font, a better George Font than we ever had. But he did say that his skill set is better for the right side than the left side. And I forget, I wrote the story back when the Jets signed him. So, like, you can go back on The Athletic and find it and read the specifics of it. I don't want to, like, start saying things that aren't, you know, what was exactly it. But he basically said he's a better fit right side than left side. And I was like, okay, that makes sense, because the Jets are probably going to draft a left tackle. So I think you're going to have Becton, for better or worse, they're throwing him out there at the left side, unless it is a complete and total failure. If it's like a colossal, it's clear in training camp that Becton's, like, basically just a complete failure his first year, he needs a ton of time and a ton of work, maybe then the Jets shuffle it. But I think you saw last year the Jets were fully willing to bench Brandon Shell, who was a kind of, you knew what you got at right tackle, for Chuma Adaga to get his development going, knowing you're gonna get more athleticism. I think you're gonna have the Jets trying to start that best five, and their best five is Becton. And if Becton's not their best option at left tackle, the Jets have more issues than just that. Like, the Jets are going to have some problems if they can't start Becton his rookie year. But you're going to have Becton left tackle, Lewis left guard, McGovern center, and then you're going to have Greg Van Roten right guard, and then Font at right tackle, I think.
All right, we'll follow up on that one. Another one from as far as the offensive line goes, this one from Byron. How many games till the O-line can function at 90% potential, considering there's five new guys? How long will it take them to mesh, especially considering the short and abbreviated preseason?
Good question, because the Jets had that issue last year. And now the issue with the Jets last year is that not only did the guys not play any preseason games together as the all five, those guys also didn't even practice until the first week of the season. So the Jets went basically all of training camp, and it was like the week of the regular season. They're like, hey, here's our offensive line. They're practicing together, but they're veterans, so they'll figure it out. And they did not figure it out. Like, narrator, like, they did not figure it out. Like, that didn't work. So I think that the big thing with the Jets here is going to be that they need – the big thing with the Jets is that everyone's healthy right now. There's no issues with those five. All those guys are ready to practice. All those fives have been in the building. Practices are starting this week with non-contact practices, and then camp padded practices start next week. Those guys are going to be out there together. And if those guys are out there together, then you got a chance to rock and roll. And then you got a chance to really get going. And that's when I think we'll see the Jets will be in a better position week one. With that said, week one will also be the first time these guys play a game together. So might be until week eight that you're seeing 90%, but what you will or should conceivably see, assuming everyone stays healthy in training camp, is that the Jets will have a better offensive line chemistry week one than they did in week one of last year, because they will have practiced and spent a full month together, which they did not spend last season. But you're still probably not going to see this offensive line executing at their full potential until maybe week 4, 5, or 6, I would think, of like the earliest.
Yeah. So one guy we haven't talked about in a while on this show is Quinnen Williams. And Justin Colon says, how do you believe Quinnen Williams will do this year on the D-line?
He's got to pick it up. I'll tell you that. I mean, he was wildly underwhelming, and that's just not a reporter standpoint. I know that there are people within the Jets front office that expected more from Quinnen Williams. Like there are people that in the Jets building that they expected more from Quinnen in 2019 from what they got. And they don't not necessarily expected Bosa or not necessarily expected Aaron Donald, but they expected to see more than what they got. And I know Greg Williams made reference, like when we talked to him a couple weeks ago, he made reference to like the ankle injury that hurt him and stuff like that. I'm sure that played a role. But there were times when Williams was just a complete non-factor on the field and a complete non-factor late in the season when theoretically he was supposed to be healed from that. Like, I had understand the hiccups when he first came back and, like, not making a huge impact. There were times when it was like he was invisible from the stat sheet, like Leonard Williams, like, invisible from the stat sheet. And the Jets wanted more than that. They had an option to draft Josh Allen or Quinnen Williams. Those were the two players that Mike McKay, it was trade back, Josh Allen, Quinnen Williams. And the Jets went with Quinnen Williams believing he was the best defensive player, the best prospect, the highest guy on their board. And there also were some concerns from the Jets of, did Josh Allen love football? And I remember looking at it, and I wrote the story right after the Jets drafted Quinnen Williams. I'm like, look, Quinnen Williams may end up being the better player. He may end up developing and becoming the better player. But for the Jets defense, Josh Allen, I felt, was the better piece for the Jets defense. And it was no different than in 2016 when I wrote that, yeah, Leonard Williams might be the better player, but I thought that Vic Beasley was a better fit for the Jets defense, because you would have had Mo Wilkerson on one side, Sheldon Richards on the other, Damon Harrison at nose tackle, and then you have Vic Beasley as your outside pass rusher. Vic Beasley, obviously, he dealt with some injuries which have taken him back, but he was a 16-sack guy when he's healthy. Josh Allen last year was a 10-sack guy for the Jaguars. I thought that Josh Allen would have been a better fit for the defense and plugged a hole that the Jets didn't have. McKagan obviously felt different. If we're going by track record, probably means the Jets made the wrong call. But the Jets are going to need more from Quinnen, and they're going to need him to take a step this year to become a dominant force. Not everyone's going to be Aaron Donald. Not everyone is going to be Ndamukong Suh when he was in his prime. But the Jets are going to need Quinnen Williams to be a difference maker, an X factor. Not Leonard Williams. They're going to need him to be better than Leonard Williams, and it needs to start this year. I know Quinnen has been training like a madman to show that he is a better player than what he was, but the Jets are going to need him to take this next step, and we'll see if they can. Because right now, this defense, you can make the argument, they're absent playmakers. With Jamal gone and Mosley gone, this team's absent playmakers. They need Quinnen Williams to be that playmaker and Quinnen Williams to be that X factor.
All right, we're going all the way to the UK for this next one. Neil Fisher, thanks for tuning in from the UK. He says, hi from the UK, Connor. With the current cap space, do you think the Jets could get a one-year deal with both Clowney and Logan Ryan? We got this far into the pod before we mentioned those two guys.
The thing with Clowney and Logan Ryan is that they've given no indication they're willing to take a bargain. If Logan Ryan was willing to accept a $5 million or $6 million contract, I think the Jets would have signed him by now. They're clearly looking to address the corner position. They still want more bodies there. They like Quincy Wilson. They like Pierre Desir. They like, you know, what Arthur Mollett and Bless Austin gave them last year as effort players. But they realize they need more. And Logan Ryan, while he had his issues last season, he'd be a veteran insurance policy to kind of put in there where, like, you know what you got with him. But Logan Ryan, everything we've heard to this point, wants $10 million per year. And he clearly is not willing to sign for less. And the Jets are not willing to give a guy $10 million a year, where last year, while statistically he filled out the stat sheet, when you go and you look at the deeper dive into the numbers, it was not that effective a year. He allowed still like a quarterback rating of like 93.7, according to Pro Football Focus. I think it was like he allowed 5 touchdowns. I think it was. I know I've written the stat before. I can't remember off the top of my head. It's like 5 or 7 touchdowns he allowed. It's absurd. Also, the interceptions he had last year were like his first interception since the 2016 season. So the guy had a massive year. The guy's a solid veteran, but he's not this like dynamic difference maker that's worth $10 million a year. I think the Jets would start dabbling in that market if it came down to 5. I don't think they're willing to do it right now. And if he's not willing to come down, as you've seen from Joe Douglas to this point, okay, then we'll look elsewhere. It's fine. We don't need you. I'm not willing to pay more. Regarding Clowney, again, it's similar to Logan Ryan that, like, I don't think the Jets just aren't willing to pay him that money. And everything I've heard is that the Jets really aren't that interested in the beginning. Like, they made calls to do, like, the typical due diligence homework that they did early in free agency, and they kind of got the background on him. But it just seems very much like they're not willing to take that next step and sign him. And they're just not that interested. And I heard early in free agency stuff about his knee, that like his knee is not totally healthy. I don't think Jadeveon Clowney's personality fits with Joe Douglas. Like, Joe Douglas is the one who said it, like on his introductory press conference. He wants guys who hate losing more than they love winning. Jadeveon Clowney is a guy who, like, in his contract year with the Texans, had a cavalier, like, Cavalier attitude and a reputation for taking plays off. When knowing that if he didn't take any plays off, he's probably getting $20 million a year. And he still takes off with the Texans, which is why they traded him. And the Seahawks were kind of like in on him, but not like the Seahawks kind of were like, well, we're not willing to give you the big money contract either, which kind of tells you something. They had him for a whole season, helped him get to the playoffs. They saw him play against the Eagles in that playoff game, and they're not willing to give him a big contract. So it's funky, you know? It's like it's weird in that I don't – there's something about Clowney that just makes me think that he's just not an option for the Jets. And I personally, if he were to come down to – if he were to be willing to accept a one-year $10 million deal, I would probably do it because why the hell not? Like, just bring him in here. He makes the Jets defense better. But the fact that he's still not signed and 31 other teams have not been willing to sign him either – kind of makes me think that there's something underlying there that not too many people are talking about. Maybe it is the knee injury. Maybe he's not fully healthy yet. Maybe teams are concerned with investing that much money to a guy that takes plays off. I don't know. But I think there's something there. There's something there that's the reason why literally all 32 teams have not been willing to pay a player that when he's on and when he's mentally checked in, he's an all-pro player. There's a reason for that.
I think I'm going to have to go back on all our past episodes and see how many episodes we've talked about Clowney and
Jadeveon Clowney
and Ryan. And Ryan. Yeah.
Every one of them.
Yeah.
Every one of them.
So I hope they find a home pretty soon. Yeah. All right. This is a pretty funny question. And you talked about this earlier, your middle school love for video games. Aiden Murphy wants to know.
Middle school? Yeah. I'm 28 and I'm still all about them.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You're like, you know, like a middle school kid. So Aiden wants to know, trying a 1v1 in Madden, and this is my favorite part. He put the, you know, we're on live on YouTube right now, so you guys listening won't be able to see this, but he put the eyes emoji, you know, like with the two big eyeballs. So he's ready.
Yeah, I don't, I'll be honest with you, man, like my Madden playing, and I've kind of stopped, like this last Madden is when I just had enough of it. Like they've completely ignored franchise mode, which has made me infuriated. I went on like a Twitter rant not long ago about it. It makes me angry. It makes me annoyed. I hate more than anything in that game how they've just kind of ignored ratings, where it's like when you play, because of their shitty gameplay, when you play bad, like my whole thing with Madden, and this is it, I want it to be a challenge. I want it to be hard to win a game. But when I compare it to the NBA franchises for 2K, is like if you create a team and you play the Lakers in NBA 2K, there is a difference between if you play the Lakers compared to if you play the Knicks. Like the Knicks are easy to beat because they're a shit team, and you play the Lakers and they're challenging to beat if you can beat them at all because they're very good. In Madden, there is like no difference between the good teams and the bad teams. There's no difference between the shit quarterbacks and the bad quarterbacks. You can literally like put an offensive lineman under center and the guy will play well. And it's like, what the hell, man? Like the dude who won the big Madden Bowl, like they do on ESPN, he won it without a quarterback. He had his punter playing quarterback and he managed to win the entire Madden Bowl. Like that is what just drives me nuts about this Madden franchise, along with like everything, like the ignoring of the franchise mode, where I really believe that like this is the last Madden I'm going to buy until they make a concerted effort to improve it. But even then, when I do play Madden, my friends and I, we just play the online franchise mode. So we each pick a team and then we build them up into a franchise contender. We'll take it like 6-7 years, but we don't usually play the user game. So we just play like against the computers. We don't play, we'll sim our user games. We'll broadcast one of them so we can watch them when we play each other. But like, we're more into like the team building and then playing a little bit against the computers than we are going head 1v1. What I will play is I do go into Warzone all the time. Like that, I play Call of Duty Warzone a lot.
And you got a Twitch account now, right?
I do. Yeah, I'm trying to go. I'm trying to become the next ninja. I'm preparing for life after, preparing for what I'm going to do whenever I retire in 30 years or whenever the hell retirement age is, 30, 40 years. And I'm going to be a live streamer broadcasting how bad I am at Call of Duty because I'm not that good, man. Call of Duty is one where I love playing it and my friends carry me all the time, but I'm not that great at it.
Hot take, NCAA football was always far superior to Madden.
Absolutely. Yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm. 100%. But it's Madden. It's NFL. Like, right. So it was like everyone flocked to the NFL, and it was because it was the NFL, but 100% NCAA was so much better.
I'd be like, grab like Idaho and build them into a national championship contender. And end up in like the Pac-12 with Idaho. And that was the best. All right. Last one here. Same theme from Tyler Capocella. Let's go to Top Golf, Connor.
I'm down for that, man. Yeah. Top Golf's fun. Yeah, Top Golf. I am always about Top Golf. I have a good time there. That's actually what got me into golf, was going to Top Golf with a friend of mine for the first time. And
we should do a live podcast obsessed from Top Golf.
We should. Let's get right. I'm down for that, man. That would be fun. Like doing a live, live video broadcast. We can have everyone critique our swings, which would be a real kick. That would be brutal. I don't know if I'd be able to survive that one. I'd be getting ripped apart there. But no, I'd be totally down for that. That would be fun. I don't know what Topgolf you guys go to. I'm like I said, I live in Princeton, so I'm kind of right in the middle of the one in Edison and Mount Laurel, and then there's one in isn't there one in like outside Florham Park or something like that? I thought there was one in like the Morris County region.
There might
or something like that. But I'm down. Yeah, let's do a live broadcast from Topgolf. That would be fun. I'd be down for that. That'd be fun. Topgolf's fun. I like that place.
All right, that's going to do it. That's all the questions. Thanks so much for getting in the questions on Twitter and also here on the chat. Thanks for tuning in to the morning edition. We know that you probably have better things to do on a Monday morning than watch us, so we definitely appreciate that. One question about the NFL season that's yet to be seen is how the lack of training this spring will impact injuries. Today on The Lead, Eno Saris joins Kavitha Davidson and Anders Kelto to discuss the alarming number of injuries to pitchers in Major League Baseball. That's The Lead right here on The Athletic, another one of our great podcasts here in The Athletic Podcast Network. If you have a friend who needs a subscription to The Athletic, check out theathletic.com/thecantwaitpodcast. You can save 40% off a one-year subscription to The Athletic. And if you don't already, obviously follow Connor on Twitter, Connor_J_Hughes. I'm at Tim M. McMaster. Tune in again next time here on the Can't Wait Podcast.